Mr. Gulley, will you stand to be sworn? Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
What is your age, Mr. Gulley?
43.
And what is your occupation?
Correction officer.
Stationed at Attica?
At Attica Correctional Facility, yes.
And how long have you been a correction officer at Attica?
I'm going on my 19th year now.
So you entered the system at about the same time that Tiny Swift did?
That's correct.
Where are you from? What area?
I'm from Oswego, New York. That's northern New York.
And what is your present assignment at Attica?
I work in the hospital on the 11 to 7 shift.
When you entered the system, what training did you receive for your job?
I didn't receive any particular training. It was we sat down with a few of the personnel at the facility and talked over the different aspects of the job and what was expected of us at the time, but no formal training.
How long have you been working in the hospital?
I've been there about 3 months now.
And before that, what was your position?
Well, I worked for a very short time in E Black, and before that I worked in D Black.
And before D Block?
I worked in HBZ.
And how long?
Segregation.
And how long were you an officer in HBZ?
About 12 years.
Now, in the 19 years that you've been at Attica, you've seen changes.
That's correct.
We had Sergeant Cochran on this morning, and we went into great detail about the duties of correction officers, and I'm not going to repeat that testimony and those questions with you, but I wonder whether you could tell us, as you perceive it, a correction officer who was there for 19 years, what changes have you sensed in Attica in recent years?
Well, the changes have been, with the inmates have changed, of course.
How have they changed?
Well, they tend to resist the rules and regulations more than they did in the past.
Are there other changes in their attitudes that you have observed?
Yes, I think they reflect the general attitudes of the society at large.
In what respect?
Disrespect for law and order in many cases. Disrespect for the rules.
Now, when did you first really detect this change in the attitude of inmates entering the system?
About 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, it became most apparent, I think.
And how would it manifest itself?
In the difficulty in maintaining the institution, the rules and regulations, the things of that nature.
And were you given any training by the correction department in how to deal with the newer type of inmate?
No, we haven't been.
Have you found it difficult to relate to some of these young fellows?
Well, yes, certainly. They make our job a little more difficult, so naturally we have more difficulty relating to them.
You told me when I spoke to you before you testified that you felt that many of the younger inmates, as opposed to the older ones, the inmates who came into the system earlier, don't feel a sense of guilt, and that they're angry, and that they feel that they really don't belong in jail.
Yes, they definitely feel that they're right. They feel that in many cases that they've been sentenced without the same justification that other people have been sentenced in different localities, for instance, and difference between colored and white, rich and poor, and so on, yes.
And they come in bitter about the system.
In many cases they do, yes.
And you yourself have observed disparities in sentences?
Yes, I have.
And what about parole? Do they come in, or do they become bitter about the parole system?
Well, yes. I don't really know an awful lot about the parole system. I haven't dealt in that particular line at the institution, but some of the inmates have mentioned that they are dissatisfied with some of the situations encountered in the parole system.
Well, haven't you seen how morale drops when the parole board leaves and things like that?
It's reflected, yes.
And it makes the job of the correction officer tougher?
Yes, it does.
Just as I suppose that if a correction officer has had a bad evening or a bad breakfast, he can make things more difficult, too. It's part of being human.
Well, I suppose that's true, yes.
Now, when they complain to you about the parole system, do they talk about the fact that they don't really know why they were denied parole, that they don't understand why they were denied parole, that somebody else got it and why didn't they?
Well, actually, I don't know an awful lot about the parole system. I know that the inmates do complain about it.
Well, when they complain, are you able to explain to them why they didn't get parole?
No, I'm not.
Is there anybody that you know of in the institution who can explain to the inmate why he did not get parole?
I suppose the parole board.
Well, do you know whether the parole board does?
No, I do not.
Haven't you been told that by these inmates that they don't get explanations?
Yes, the inmates have said this, but I haven't heard anything from the parole board.
You
haven't heard one side of it, mm-hmm. Not both sides.
Now, in these years in the institution, you, like Sergeant Cochran, others, have seen inmates leave and then come back.
This is true.
Do you believe that Attica, as it's presently structured, helps rehabilitate inmates and keep them law-abiding when they're released?
Well, the system isn't doing as good a job as we might.
Now, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Is it also your observation that inmates are coming in with shorter sentences?
Yes, they are.
That they're going to be through Attica and out in society in a much shorter period than they normally would have been in the older days.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Attica could do more than it's doing today to help these people?
Well, I think that more programs should be made available to them. Programs for training, vocational training, educational training in that would have to do with getting along better in society. What is society, other than the society that they've been subjected to so far? Yes, I think there are many things that we could do, but we have to have the funds. We were operating with handicaps because of the funds that are available to us.
Do you think that the state could do more for correction officers to help them understand and relate to these inmates?
There's no question about that.
Such as giving them some training in this area?
Training, that's correct.
And today, as I understand it, there's virtually none.
Well, they are setting up training programs for the officers. They're making certain things available. But up to this time, they haven't been available, no. There are attempts right now to improve the capabilities of the officers. And we hope, everybody in correction hopes, that this continues and is expanded upon.
Now, You mentioned that you were in HBZ as an officer for a number of years. Would you explain exactly what HBZ is?
HBZ is what was referred to as the barracks for several years. HBZ was an area that inmates were sent who couldn't conform to the society in the institution. They were put there under more rigorous rules and regulations, and it was attempted to get them ready for the general population.
Could you point out on the map where HBZ is?
Yes, it's in the top of this building right here.
It's on the top of the reception building?
Yes, it's the top floor, right in here.
Now, what restrictions are inmates under in HBZ that other inmates are not under?
Well, they're kept in their cells more, and they're kept under closer observation.
Well, when you say they're kept in their cells more, how many hours a day is a man kept in HBZ in his cell?
Well, most of the day, matter of fact.
23 hours or so?
About 23 hours.
And when he's let out, it's to exercise in a little exercise area.
That's
in
correct.
HBZ. Men are fed in their cells?
Yes.
And they have toilet facilities in their cells?
That's right.
There's a shower in the HBZ area?
Yes, there is. There are two.
How often does a man in HBZ get a shower?
I don't know. I don't know how many times
when you were
they
there.
Were permitted. Well, I worked nights, and they didn't get any showers at night.
Now, you worked nights at HBZ. Did you escort men up in the elevator?
I received them at the top of the elevator, yes.
So you received them after they had been up?
Right.
In the elevator. Now, did you ever witness an inmate being beaten in HBZ by a correction officer?
No, I never have.
Did you ever witness any inmate who emerged from the elevator with marks of a beating?
Not in the 12 years I was there, no.
Now, you know that it is commonly rumored in Attica that men are beaten on the way up to HBZ. You've heard those rumors.
Oh, yes.
Now, if it doesn't happen, what do you attribute this legend to?
Just that, it's a legend. It probably has happened in the past. But in the number of years that I've been there, it hasn't.
Did you, in fact, hear that in the past there were goon squads?
Yes, I've heard that expression.
But in the years that you worked in HBZ, that practice did not exist there?
No, I don't know exactly what a goon squad is supposed to do.
Well, when you heard the term, you must have asked what
it
means.
Oh, yes, I've heard the term goon squad, but I've never seen a goon squad in action.
Are there goon squads?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, what did it conjure up when you heard it?
Well, it would make you think that there were a group of bullies, more or less, that would be sent into a certain area to quell a disturbance.
Now, if an inmate acted up when he was in HBZ, how did you deal with that?
We wrote reports up.
Now, was that always so from the time you were there?
Yes, we always had to write reports.
Well,
disciplinary reports and psychological.
Could you
reports.
Also, was there a period when you could use gas to quiet an inmate
That's right.
down? And when was that?
Well, gas was used in incidences to keep a man from harming himself. For instance, occasionally we would have a man go berserk or begin to break up his cell, break his bed up, his toilet, and be thrashing about, banging into the walls, and we did not have access at that time to the levers that unlocked his cell, so we had to do something. We'd fire a round of gas into the cell, and he would stop. And we would call the lieutenant, and he'd come over with a couple of officers, and we'd move him from his cell, put him into another strip cell.
Well, who had discretion as to whether gas was warranted?
The officers had the discretion to use it at that time under given circumstances. A report was also required at that time, and you would have to prove that you had a very good reason for using it.
And was that practice changed?
Yes, it has been changed.
And when was that?
About 4 years ago.
And
5 years ago.
What was the change?
No gas is allowed to use now, under any circumstance, as far as I know.
Now, during the period that you could use gas, how frequently was it used during the night shift that you worked?
Very infrequently, maybe once a year or so.
Now, why did you leave HBZ? Did you do that pursuant to the job bidding system?
Yes, I did.
Now, you were an experienced officer in HBZ.
That's right.
What led you to leave that job?
Well, I felt that since many changes were going into effect, and the changes that I found difficult to adapt to, that younger men would do a better job up there.
And what were the changes that you're talking about?
Changes in disciplinary procedures and so on.
Could you amplify on what you mean by that?
Yes. It got to the point where we're being called names all the time, and they would throw things at us, things of this nature that caused the job to be difficult and very irritating.
And that was a change in the way the inmates reacted to you. What was the change in the way you could react to them?
We could do nothing.
And why could you do nothing?
Because we didn't have the authority to do anything.
Well, was gas the only thing that was taken away from you?
Gas and the fact that it seemed to us in many instances that after writing reports out, very little or nothing was done about it.
And who would you write these reports out to?
Reports were written out to the deputy superintendent.
And you felt that the men were not being punished further if they rebelled against you in HBZ?
Apparently they weren't, because they continued to get worse and worse.
They call you names?
Oh, yes.
Would you ever call names back?
No, I never had.
Now, have you ever heard an officer call an inmate a nigger to his face?
Of course not. That would be asinine.
Why would it be asinine?
Because you would make your job more difficult, that's all.
But
you're in a situation where you have to get along with these people. And name-calling, even if they call you names, just isn't going to make your job easier for you.
Have you ever heard any correction officers, when talking among themselves, use that term?
Talking among themselves? Sure, I've heard that.
You would agree that in an institution like Attica, which had all white correction officers, you'd find all degrees of bias.
Sure. Yeah. Same as in general society.
And did you ever hear inmates complain to you about the fact that they weren't treated like men?
Yeah, sure. I've heard them complain. Yeah.
Now, you understand that they're inmates in a prison, and that they're not going to have the same degree of freedom that you'd have on the outside. Do you think that the inmates accepted that?
Well, I think they accepted it. I don't think they liked it too well, no.
Well, then what did you think that they were complaining about if they accepted the concept of confinement when they talked about the fact that they weren't treated like men?
Well, I don't know exactly what you're getting at. If you're put into an institution, you accept the fact that you're in there. You don't have to like it, though. You can grumble and complain about it all the time you're in there. You've accepted the fact that you're there, but you are not prepared to conform to it.
Well, is it your testimony then that you feel that their complaint was essentially that they were in the institution rather than the way they were treated in the institution?
Yes, I think so.
Did you ever hear inmates complain about the nightstick or the...
No, I haven't. No, I heard a lot of them about the nightstick in the press, but I haven't. The inmates and the officers paid very little attention to it.
How do you feel about the nightstick?
I personally don't like the nightstick. I think we'd be better off without it.
Can you understand why an inmate would resent a man holding a nightstick when he's talking to him?
Absolutely. If it's our job to help these individuals, then it's pretty difficult to convince somebody you're trying to help them when you have a stick in your hand.
And you would agree that if you're in a job in which you may be in the company of anywhere from 40 to 100 inmates at one time, that a nightstick really doesn't offer you any protection?
No, it's actually a threat to you.
It's a dangerous weapon as far as the officer is
right.
Concerned. Do you know why it still is a department regulation that an officer must carry a nightstick?
I suppose it has to do with a show of authority.
This raises the whole question of the extent of communication between the correction officers and the policymakers. Here you are, a man who's been in this job for 19 years, and you agree with the inmates on a matter which they resent so much. Do you ever have opportunities to talk about these things with the policymakers?
Occasionally we have, but there's not enough communication between the officers and the administration. There hasn't been in the past. We hope that this is going to improve. The new superintendent has brought this up himself, that he'd like to have more communication between the officers and the men. I hope that this is carried out.
How many times in the 19... Well, that may be an unfair question, but how many times in the last 5 years before September 9 did you have meetings with the superintendent?
In the last 5 years?
Yes.
Well, I've had meetings with him 10 or 12 times.
And you were a union representative.
Yeah, it had to do with the union on each occasion.
And if you weren't a union representative, are you saying that you probably wouldn't have had any meetings with him?
Probably not.
And how many times did you have meetings with a deputy commissioner in Albany?
Well, we had a meeting one time with Deputy Commissioner Dunbar.
And that was just before the uprising?
Just before the uprising. Right?
And in all the years before Mr. Dunbar and Mr. Oswald came into office, you didn't have meetings?
No, we had no such meetings.
Did you have a lot on your chest that you wanted to get off over these?
Yes, several things were discussed with the commissioner at the time.
Do you want to discuss them now with me?
Well, some of the things had to do with the keep lock system, the relaxing of the inmate rules.
What were you... there were frustrations that were building up among the officer body prior to September 9. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's fair.
And why don't you just describe for the public what the frustrations were that you felt as an experienced correction officer and that others in your position?
Well, we were being threatened with an uprising. There were several evidences that pointed to this, and we wanted a system whereby we could be warned if any such uprising occurred. We wanted a system of planning as to what to do in a particular case, but these were discussed with the superintendent at the time, and while he took them on advisement in each instance, nothing was really done as far as I could see.
Did you have any planning for a disturbance prior to September 9?
There may have been a plan.
Was it ever communicated to the men?
However, the men were not aware of it.
Now, what about the warning system? Was there a warning system?
No, there wasn't any warning system of any kind.
Now, you've talked about things to do in the event there was an uprising, which you were apprehensive about. Am I correct?
That's correct.
An alarm system, some kind of plan. Did you also have any thoughts on what could be done to reduce the unrest in the institution?
Well, we had a lot of thoughts. There were a lot of things. Things like I just mentioned, the plan, the better communication between the officers and the administration, things of this nature we've already gone over.
But that deals with your relationship to your superiors. What about things that would affect the way in which an inmate would react to you as a correction officer?
Well, we've also gone over that. The rule book, for instance, inmate rule book. Several of the rules in the inmate rule book were given little consideration, but they were there in the rule book.
What do you mean by little consideration?
Well, it was very seldom that an inmate would be locked up for certain things.
And yet you were supposed to enforce the rules?
Well, you were supposed to enforce them. Not everybody enforced them in the same way. We think that many of us think that if a new rule book were to come out now with more simplified rules that were to be followed.
Do you think it's a fair criticism by inmates that they really never were fully instructed on what was expected of them in the way of behavior?
No. The inmates received their rule book. But as they were subjected to prison life over a period of years, they learned that certain rules were followed more closely than others. So, in other words, there was a latitude in here that they could get away with certain things at certain times, and other times they couldn't.
And that would depend on the correction officer who is enforcing the rule.
That's right. In many cases where a correction officer knows his inmates. In other words, if I have a gang and that's working for me, and somebody breaks a particular rule, then I would handle it myself in many cases. But where I don't know this inmate, then I would have to write a report up and let somebody else handle the infraction.
So that the inmates might feel that there was discriminatory enforcement of the rules.
That's right.
And that would also add to the unrest.
That's correct.
And as long as it was up to an officer as to whether he was really going to enforce one of these rules, the enforcement would vary from officer to officer, cell block to cell block.
That's right.
And
that's right, and there would not situation to situation.
And there would not always be the same officer in charge of the same company.
No, of course not.
Now, there have been a number of complaints which have been uttered about the screen in the visiting room. How do you feel about that?
Well, I have very little contact with the visiting room, and I don't really know.
Well, is it a fact that in HBZ, an inmate can visit with his people without a screen?
That may or may not be a fact. I don't know, because the visiting hours are in a different shift than the one I work.
But you saw the visiting room in the reception building.
I've seen it, yes.
And you've observed that there is not a screen.
There's a heavy screen between the people, I believe. Very coarse.
You haven't observed the one on the left as you entered the building?
I've observed it, it seemed to me, but I've never been in the room. It seemed to me that there was a screen there, a large screen.
You're talking about the big visiting room as you enter the whole institution.
Yeah.
I was asking you about the place for visits in HBZ.
I've never been in there.
In the reception building on the first floor.
Yeah, I haven't been in that room.
What I was trying to discuss with you, but since you are not familiar with it, I'll abandon the subject, is the fact that the visiting room in HBZ, where the offenders against the institution are confined, does not have a screen, whereas the visiting room in the institution, which is available to the general population, which is observing the rules, has the screen.
Well, that's as far as I know, that's true. It's just a room. But the it's just a room, just a plain room. But that's generally true with all the inmates in HBZ. They continually break all rules and regulations that they can possibly break. All night long, they're screaming. I work in the hospital next to the HBZ right now, and they're screaming all night long over there, which isn't very handy for the patients in the hospital, but they're not stopped.